As many of you know that I never plan any talk because now I like practicing mindfulness, being in the present moment and also connecting with each one of you. In other words, that's part of my mindfulness practice, to be here rather than to plan. And I just recall when I was the school teacher and I had to take an assembly for 1 week in a grammar school in UK, and I taught mindfulness every morning for 5 days, and that was 41 years ago. And I do recall having 650 children from 11 to 17 sitting quietly for 5 minutes while I taught them to be mindful, and afterwards spontaneously every one of those 650 children gave me applause, which had never been heard before in an assembly. Obviously, it does work, and it has worked for many years. But that's what I'm going to be focusing on, with some stories and anecdotes, rather than PowerPoints, because I want you to be mindful of me, not be divided, is that, number one, I want to take the mindfulness movement even further and to show just how we can, number one, empower mindfulness and how we can use mindfulness for feedback, which is one of the important ways we know that we can get great health benefits and emotional benefits, and also how we can empower mindfulness with some other qualities as well. But first of all, empowering mindfulness is, we all should know what awareness is. We all have some degree of awareness, but you notice when you first wake up in the morning, before you've had your first cup of coffee, you're aware, but not that aware. We are dull. And later on in the day, that there are times when you are fully aware, and in fact more aware than is common for you. And those are the times when you can be incredibly creative, you can be very responsive and very productive. So one of the things which I did learn, sort of as in the jungles, is actually not just to be aware, but actually to boost the power of mindfulness. And what we did find, it is the thing, the quality which improves the power of your mindfulness more than anything else, is learning how to be still. In other words, just focusing on not moving. Not moving the body, not moving the mind. And that is why that many people, they do mindfulness training sitting still with your eyes closed. Now on the photo over there, they did see people sitting on the floor. You don't need to do that for mindfulness training. Chairs or even on beds of wonderful places to actually do mindfulness training. But you will find, you will notice that when you stay in the moment, you don't move too much, then you find your mindfulness starts to increase. You become more awake. Now one of the things I learned living in a jungle, you just can't have too many possessions. Because whatever you have usually gets moldy because of the dampness, gets eaten by the insects. And so we always had this idea of just having few things. And this is one of the first exercises I'm going to share with you of learning how to empower mindfulness by doing a little bit of stillness. And I'm going to take the cue of my fellow presenter by giving you a little mindfulness exercise. So once again, if you wish, you can please close your eyes and sit comfortably. And we just heard that mindfulness is all about being in the present moment. So I want you to now just imagine that you are carrying two heavy shopping bags. You've been at Orchard Road and you've got some lots and lots of stuff. And those shopping bags, you've experienced this before, when you carry them for too long, your arms ache and your shoulders hurt. So imagine you have two very heavy shopping bags and you've been carrying them for so long you can feel their weight. Your arms ache, your shoulders hurt. And now you imagine looking down at the shopping bag in your left hand and you see on the outside the four letters P-A-S-T, the past. Because in that shopping bag, it represents all of your memories, good and bad, which you've been carrying around for far too long. And you gaze in your imagination at the shopping bag in your right hand, and on the outside are the letters F-U-T-U-R-E. That is the future. That is all your fears, anxieties. It's your plans and your dreams as well. But you've been carrying them for so long that just like your arm and shoulder hurt, if you've been carrying real things, it makes your heart very tired, your mind very weak. So you feel the weight of the past and the future which you've been carrying around for such a long time. And now you imagine lowering the bag in your left hand to the floor. And when it meets the ground, the weight, the burden disappears. And that allows you to uncurl the fingers of your hand and move your arm up to the side. You've let go of the past. You haven't thrown it away. It's there for you later on. But you're resting your arm. And then you imagine the bag in your right hand representing the future, or your hopes and fears. And you imagine lowering that to the ground. And when it meets the floor, the weight, the burden disappears, allowing you to move your right arm up so it can hang loosely by your side, allowing your arms and your shoulders to rest, recuperate, re-energize. And you're standing between those two bags. This is what we mean by the present moment. That place right between your past and the future is called now. And just as you put down the past and you put down the future, this is a place you can rest. It's a place of stillness. And because you rest, your energies start to increase. And because they increase, you have more power just to be. You're empowering mindfulness. And at the end of the exercise, unfortunately, you have to pick up those bags again and carry them. They are yours, I'm sorry, but no one can take them away for you. So just open your eyes again now. It's a little exercise which you can practice because, number one, it gives you an exercise on how to be in the present moment and the importance of being now, because it is the past and the future which tire us out. And by just resting for a few minutes, you find that those bags feel much lighter afterwards. They're much easier to carry, which gives you an understanding that mindfulness being in the present moment, this is how it works. You put down the past and the future for a few moments, and it empowers you to be able to carry on with your work, with your life, with your duties and responsibilities, with greater efficiency. And it also shows that one of the reasons why that people do have like cognitive disorders, like tiredness, anger, depression, is because we are chronically tired. And that is because we don't know how to rest. And people who do rest, they do find their mind has more energy. In other words, they can, as you say, be more productive. It's empowering mindfulness, making it stronger and stronger and stronger. And the other thing which happens when you empower your mindfulness, when you go stronger and stronger, when you become more still, not only do you see more, but actually whatever you see becomes more beautiful. It's a strange thing that We get depressed because our mind is so tired that we cannot actually see the beauty in life. The colors are just washed out. Tastes are all dull. And even just the brightness of the sun is just like dimmed for us. Depression, if you can be aware of it, is a very dull state of mind. And if you build up the energies of the mind, everything becomes brighter. Food becomes more tasty, and colors become more intense. Even when you hit your foot, it actually hurts more because you're more aware of it. But all it is the mindfulness, when it's empowered by stillness, gets incredibly strong. And it is that which allows you to appreciate life so much. So even living in a jungle as a monk, with no TV, with no music, with no anything which you usually take as your entertainment, still you had so much fun, so much happiness, so much laughter, because your mind was bright. So I'm supposed to talk about some of the stories there. And one of those stories that Chanji wanted me to talk about was eating frogs. Now, actually, I was a vegetarian before I became a monk. But unfortunately, there weren't any vegetables in the place where I went to stay, just rice and whatever crawled and slithered on the ground. And on one occasion, there was many gross things I had to eat, like frog soup. And for frog soup, it was just little frogs which were just big enough to fit on a Chinese spoon, you know, the bigger spoons. And there was no sauce, no garlic, no salt, no soya sauce, just boiling water with frogs floating in it. And we had that with our ball of glutinous rice, sticky rice. And it was just big enough to put on a spoon and put in your mouth and go crunch. Now, are you grossed out by that? And what mindfulness tells you is you anticipate that that's going to taste terrible. And it's the anticipation which actually makes it terrible. If you live in the present moment, and you don't fear anything, you don't judge anything, you don't say what it's going to be, then you can actually eat it. Have you ever gone into those mindfulness restaurants which are dark and you can't see? And there you eat food because you're in the present moment, you don't know what you're going to eat, and because of that you can't really tell what it's going to taste like. You put it in your mouth, and because you have to be in the present moment, you can't sort of judge what it's going to be, you get much more enjoyment out of these different flavors. So a lot of times, because of my mindfulness training, because I was in the present moment, because I didn't think, oh, this is going to taste awful, this is going to be terrible, you could actually eat that and crunch that. And what I discovered when I was in the present moment, that it actually did taste terrible. But I could still eat it because I wasn't projecting into the future. That's sometimes what we mean about being non-judgmental. It's amazing what you can do when you don't project into the future. And one little anecdote, not from the jungles of Thailand, but from the forests of Australia, was a story about how mindfulness can help you even in painful situations. Because as one of my students, now he's still there over in our monastery in Australia, he had a bad toothache. And he was too lazy to go to the dentist. So he decided to take the tooth out himself. And I saw him, you know, after he'd done the operation, in a pair of pliers from the workshop, holding a tooth with blood all over it. He used mindfulness non-judgmental in the present moment. And I asked him, how do you do that? And he said, well, when I decided to take out my tooth myself, that didn't hurt. When I walked to the tool shed, that never hurt. When I picked up the pliers, that never hurt. When I put the pliers on my tooth, that never hurt either. When I wiggled the tooth, that hurt. But only for a couple of seconds, and then it was out. Now you can see how sometimes when we practice mindfulness in the present moment, how it can take away a lot of pain and a lot of difficulties in our life. Because when I said that little story, or when I said about eating frogs, you were disgusted about eating frogs, even though you're not eating frogs right now. And you thought, that is terrible, that is painful. If that was you, your tooth would hurt even when you were walking to the workshop, even before you picked up the pliers. You can see how when mindfulness goes into the future, or rather you lose your mindfulness and your mind goes off into the future, how you make pain, how you make it hurt. So one of the wonderful things about mindfulness, if you do keep it into the present moment, it doesn't hurt until the tooth actually comes out. Most people, it hurts for days beforehand, the thought of it. So when you can empower that mindfulness that way, it does have enormous benefits. And what I really wanted to say is also it just increases your general level of happiness. Because we were spending so much time in the present moment, because that's our training, it meant that our minds were far more energized. We weren't so dull. And that by itself was a great cause of happiness and the opposite of depression. But also the mindfulness gave you some feedback. Whenever you were feeling sickly, and sometimes we're far too distant from the nearest hospital, because you're in the jungles and it was a third world country and it was 40 years ago, that you had to learn how to heal yourself. And it was the awareness which helped you. There was one of my fellow monks, and he had a bad back. He had some problem with his spine. And because of that, he couldn't meditate very long. Monks would sit on the floor, he didn't have chairs. And it was so painful for him, and he thought he'd have to try some other way of living his life. He couldn't be a monk anymore. And he went to see a doctor, and the doctor told him, this is congenital, there's nothing we can actually do by surgery or by any medication except strong painkillers. And said, I'm sorry, but this lifestyle is not for you. And how he used mindfulness to solve the problem is a very good indication of how we can use mindfulness to give us feedback, how we could, and he's still a monk these days. So what he did was, he had, his spine was weak, I'm not quite exactly sure what the medical description was. He had to create awareness, mindfulness, of some muscles which most of us just have no awareness of at all. He started by taking his hand and stroking the muscles on either side of his spine. Because every time you are aware mindfully of any sensation, the scientists have shown you're actually making connections in your brain. You're making neural connections. And when he kept touching his spine, the muscles on either side of the spine, he was making those connections in his brain until those connections were so strong he could actually feel those muscles without needing to touch them. He could be aware of the sensations and feelings in those muscles. And then, once he had awareness of those muscles, it was trial and error until he could know how to move those muscles. The awareness gave him the feedback, so he could know whether the muscles were stretching or whether they were relaxing. And after a while, he became so aware of those muscles, He could stretch them or relax them at will. Things, because we're not aware of those muscles, because we never become mindful of them, we never actually realize they're even there. But he created that awareness of a part of a body which most people just don't know about, to the point where his feedback given by mindfulness could stretch, could actually relax, so he could exercise those muscles. Just like you exercise your arms or your legs, he exercised those muscles until they became so strong, far stronger than the equivalent muscles in your back, that now they fully compensate for the weakness in his spine. And he could sit without any back pain at all. Now that is an anecdote, an example of how when we are aware, it gives us some control even over our body. And I can't avoid telling you one of the things which I did a couple of years ago, which again shows you the power of mindfulness and how also when you empower it with, in this particular case, simple kindness, that it can cure amazing things. And this was a time 2 years ago when I had food poisoning. Now, many of you know that a Buddhist monk just eats what you give him, which means that sometimes you give me stuff which my stomach does not like at all. And so getting a sore stomach, indigestion, is what we call an occupational hazard. And this particular time, it must have been some very dirty food which somebody gave, or they left cooked it the night before and it sort of, you know, got some bacteria in it, because this time I had full-on food poisoning. And if you've ever had food poisoning, you have cramps in your intestines, which are very, very painful. But it's too far from the place where I live to go into town to see a doctor. And when you go and see a doctor, you have to wait in line with other people. And by the time you go and see the doctor, you'll probably be dead anyway. So, well, not really that. So instead of actually going to the problem of seeing a doctor, I use my mindfulness to be fully aware, you know, of the terrible pains in the intestines as they were cramping. Now, of course, the only way you can do that is to understand that this mindfulness is really focused in the present moment. And all the fear, which stops you being able to be aware of pain, is about the future. About, I can't stand this any longer. I can't do this anymore. You know, it's so easy to be at peace even with incredible pain if you can manage to sort of focus in the present moment. And I could do that because I've had lots of training. So I could focus on the cramps in the tummy and the agonizing pain because I was only in this moment and I didn't really worry about what was going to happen next. And number two, that meant I could get feedback. I can see how those feelings changed. And as well as the mindfulness, now added kindness. I know that my co-presenter just pointed out the magazine Mindful, which is being made by Shambhala Sun. 2 weeks ago, I was in their office in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and just talking with them about how mindfulness movement is actually progressing into the future. And they are adding such things as kindness and other stuff into the mindfulness movement, which is why they've got that new magazine coming out. And by adding the simple thing of kindness onto mindfulness, I could notice the pain in the gut actually get a little bit less. It was the feedback which mindfulness gave me, which was really important. And I knew I was actually lessening the pain. And I continued in the same direction because mindfulness gives you some control. You can see whether it's getting worse, getting better. So it's getting better and better and better and better and better. And because I'm skilled in this, I've been a monk over 40 years now and meditating for 45 years, that it does mean that I'm good at this. It took me 20 minutes, that's all, to have all of the agony, aches, pains, discomfort totally vanish and never come back again. It was a wonderful experience of the power of mindfulness. It gave you feedback, you can control things, and you can learn how to lessen them. It gave you an idea of how your body works and how you can take it, you know, from painfulness, pain, into something much lighter. You can see just how things change. So it's wonderful how that gives you control over your bodily feelings. Once you're aware of them, you get feedback, and then you learn, just like that monk learned how to relax and how to train, strengthen the muscles of his back. I learned how to relax the muscles in my tummy, so the pain totally vanished. It gives you an idea of how that mindfulness works. And the next thing, as well as empowering that mindfulness, and you know, so it can give you a lot of feedback, we also learn just how to use it, and also we learn how to direct the mindfulness as well. Because mindfulness is like a power like anything else, and we can use a little bit of wisdom to actually direct it into places, you know, where we have trouble. And as a monk growing up in the jungles of Thailand, one of the biggest problems were the snakes. When I first went to Thailand, I was told there were 100 different species of snake. 99 were venomous. If they bit you, you were in big trouble. And the last of those species, the number 100, would strangle you to death. In other words, every one of those snakes was dangerous. And there we were, as poor monks, walking in the jungle with no shoes, because they had all fallen apart and we couldn't get new ones, with flashlights with no batteries, just using either moonlight or starlight to find our way back, knowing there were many snakes on the path. So because those snakes were a danger, because they were the main danger, whenever I walked back after an evening service back to the hut where I lived in the jungle, I was never wandering off. I never started thinking about fantasies or dreams or holidays or anything else. My mindfulness was totally directed towards snakes. And because my mindfulness was directed to the biggest danger, it meant that if I saw a shadow across the path, which I did not know whether it was a snake or a stick, I would jump over it or take another route, which was why I never got bitten. And I've used that little simile to show how mindfulness, when it's directed, can solve all sorts of difficulties and problems which you have in your life. For example, that you know, if you do get angry very easily, and that is like a snake, it's bitten you so many times before. So you develop mindfulness, you know, of that part of your mind or your brain which is called anger. You know it's a danger, so you're on the lookout for it. Because you find any of these emotional problems people have in their lives, the anger doesn't suddenly burst forth. It grows. It's a small irritation which can very quickly grow into a huge ball of anger. But it starts with a little irritation. And if one can develop that awareness in the present moment, focusing it to one particular problem like anger, and be on the lookout for it, you usually can catch it very early. If you catch it very early, it's very easy to take another route. I say that mindfulness in your life offers many doors you can go through, rather than the old habitual single door which you always go through every time. And you get into trouble, you get angry, people push your buttons, which means that you've only got one door to go through. When you have mindfulness, and you have it early on, you find there's many choices you can make. You can literally choose to go on a different path, like I could choose to go on a different path than where I thought that snake might be. And so you can catch the anger very, very early. And many other emotions you can catch as well with awareness. I know I was supposed to be talking about life in the jungle, but I love these other stories of the power of mindfulness. And to keep it practical, so everyone here, no matter what religion or no religion or whatever you believe in, you can all benefit from this incredible thing called mindfulness when it is empowered. Because being a monk who's practiced this mindfulness, one of the things which you can discover all sorts of amazing new things when you're aware in this present moment, because this is where life is happening right now. This is like the laboratory, the science as a laboratory. This is a laboratory of your life, this present moment. Life is actually happening. Not reruns, not stuff which is coming up next week in a theatre close to you. This is actually happening right now. This is real. And one of the things I always notice with emotions which cause people a lot of problems, like depression, like anxiety, I always notice that these emotions have a physical counterpart to them. You don't just have anxiety in your mind, you actually feel it in your body as well. And this is a wonderful story which has great consequences for the treatment of stuff like anxiety. There was a young lady in Adelaide University who had such severe anxiety and panic attacks that she was bedridden. And even though she had a psychologist at the university referred to by the GP for free, nothing was improving. In fact, she was getting worse and worse and worse, bedridden. She was very fortunate that she had a boyfriend, a live-in boyfriend who would do everything for her, would cook, wash her clothes, and do everything for the girl. I call that a boyfriend from heaven. If any of you girls have got one like that, or you're so lucky, keep him. They're incredibly rare. And because she wasn't getting any better, she did call me, because her uncle was a disciple, she called me to tell me the problem. And I straight away said, next time you have a panic attack, be mindful of it. Where do you feel it in your body? And she said, I don't know. I asked her, in 2 or 3 days, give me a call and let me know. That's your job to find out. And after 3 days, she called me. She was in Adelaide, I was in Perth. She called me and said, I feel it just below my breast, in my chest. I said, that's not good enough. I want accurate coordinates. How much below your breath? Center, to the left, to the right? And she gave me another call in 2 or 3 days' time. She could actually locate it. And I said, describe it to me. She said, well, it's tense. That's not good enough. I want a full description. 3 days later, she could tell me exactly where the feeling was whenever she had a panic attack, and she could describe it to me in detail. Now, that exercise was making her be aware, be mindful of the physical counterpart to anxiety. That's the whole purpose, a trick to make her really aware of this. Just saying it hurt, you're not really mindful. It's not strong enough. You haven't got enough details. So once she developed enough awareness of that feeling, the next stage was very easy. You see, get your hand next time you have a panic attack or anxiety disorder and massage that area with some kindness. And I did tell her, if you're too weak to do that, get your boyfriend to massage it. That's what boyfriends are there for. And she did that, and 3 days later she called me again and said, how did it go? Did you do that? I said, yeah. No, and when I had a panic attack, I knew exactly where it was. My boyfriend massaged that area. And I said, how did it feel after he massaged you? He said, oh, that physical feeling went. It disappeared because you're relaxing your body. And the tension in the body just vanishes. And that's when I asked the key question, when the physical counterpart to anxiety vanished, what happened to the anxiety? And I could never forget the pause. She paused for about 10 seconds. It was what we call light bulb moments. The anxiety went too, she said. I said, great. Now, with the mindfulness, which gives you the feedback, and the kindness, which shows you how to actually lessen the power of that anxiety, you know how to treat yourself. And 2 weeks later, she was out of bed, went back to university, got first-class honors in dentistry, and about a year later, I did the wedding service for her and her boyfriend. It was so sweet to be able to do that. Gave her life back. Now that has been repeated in hospitals. It is the power of mindfulness. And when you have a sickness there, it's, well, not sickness, this is emotional problems. Anxiety, fear, it's located in the body somewhere, as well as in the mind. Emotions and the body, they connect together. And sometimes it's very hard for us, and unless you've been a very skillful athlete of the mind and you've been meditating or doing mindfulness for a long time, it's very hard to actually to deal with these things directly in the mind. So you actually use the physical feelings. Aware of the physical feelings, find out how they get less, which is usually the kindness, and then they vanish completely away. The physical counterpart vanishes, and then so does the mental counterpart vanish. The anxiety has been relieved. It's a beautiful thing to be able to do that. Now also, I do remember, obviously, the introduction I did very, very well when I was at school and university. And I sometimes wonder why I did very, very well, because I did have a natural mindfulness. Because whenever you are aware, in other words, letting go of the 2 suitcases of past and future, when you're in this moment, you're actually paying attention. And you're paying attention to especially what the teacher was telling you. And because you were paying attention, I never like people taking notes, especially even in my talks and lectures, when people take notes, I usually sort of embarrass them. Because if you're taking a note, you're not paying attention. And I know that if you're mindful, you absorb information. As in the diagrams we saw in the pictures over there, if a person is working or listening to someone and they're thinking of someone else, it's like they're a sponge which is wet. They can't absorb very much. But imagine you're a sponge which is totally dry. You can absorb so much. And that is like a person who is mindful. In this moment, paying attention, you absorb so much of what's being said. And that was one of the reasons why I did so well at school and university, and even listening to lectures from other people. You absorb when you're mindful, which is one of the reasons why mindfulness training to children at school obviously increases their academic performance. They actually just absorb more information when they're not thinking or they're not wandering off somewhere. But how is it that we can stay in this present moment? How is it we can be mindful? As well as saying that mindfulness can be directed, that mindfulness should be empowered by such things as like kindness, there's another important part of mindfulness which helps us develop it to make it much stronger, and that is joy and happiness. You find when a person is enjoying what they're aware of, their mind doesn't wander. And sometimes when people do any mindfulness training, their mind wanders all over the place. I say, does your mind wander off when you're watching Manchester United play Liverpool, if you like football? Does your mind wander off when you're watching a movie? Why are you mindful? In other words, aware of what you're doing. Now, when you're enjoying it, it's because the joy makes it really interesting. So in order to enhance this thing called mindfulness, we also add this joy and happiness to whatever we're doing. And if, you know, you have some work to do and you want to keep the attention there, add the joy, add the happiness. Make this moment fun. And of course, in education, that's one of the biggest problems. Teachers are boring. Lecturers are boring, which is why your mind wanders off. It's why every now and again I tell a joke during my talks. And can I tell a joke? Okay, here we go. This is an exercise in mindfulness, because when I tell a joke, people pay attention. Okay, here we go. I heard this joke the other day that somebody in Australia, they were fed up with paying all of this money for insurance to make sure that nobody broke into their house, and paying all this money for security screens and double locks. And they have something called Neighbourhood Watch in the West, where your neighbours group together. If you're away, other people in the street look after your house. So he resigned from Neighbourhood Watch. It was just too much busyness. He found another way to have 100% perfect security in his house and his property. He put some flags of IS, the Islamic State flags, in his house. And now the security, the federal police, the CIA are watching him 24/7. He's never felt so safe in all his life. Now you are all mindful as I was telling that joke. Can you see just how happiness and joy, it enhances your mindfulness. And actually mindfulness also enhances the joy. So sometimes when we practice mindfulness, we're supposed to be in the present moment. Why does our mind wander off? It's because we don't notice the joy in just being here. Now, one of the ways of doing that to enhance your mindfulness is actually appreciation. Appreciation, isn't it wonderful? I don't have to worry about what I have to do next. Isn't it great? I don't have to bear the burden of what happened in the past. Isn't it wonderful? I don't have to worry about how many minutes I'm going over in my presentation. This is where appreciation, gratitude, not seeing what's missing, but seeing what you have. A little bit of wisdom actually makes mindfulness a lot much more stronger. Just appreciating the beauty of being here. The wonder of now. Until you get so like a person who is a gourmet of the present moment. You know, some food is very refined, but your palate is not refined enough to enjoy it. Some music is so refined that your ears haven't learned how to appreciate it. So when you do our mindfulness more and more, you start to appreciate this present moment, this now, this just awareness so much, it becomes a joyful place to be in. And I'm just going to finish off with a story to show you why that is. And I tell this story, over in Australia, because I live on top of a mountain. The reason why we build monasteries on top of mountains is because of tradition. Because holy men are supposed to live on top of mountains. And you never hear of a holy man living in a swamp. With one exception. Yoda. Star Wars. He lives in a swamp. So we built our monastery on top of a mountain. And for 7 years, I've been going up and down that mountain in a car. One sunny day, a morning, had plenty of time, I decided to walk up that mountain. It only took about half an hour, 45 minutes. But as I started walking, something strange happened. I could not recognize my surroundings. The hillside looked totally different than what I remembered seeing through the window of a speeding car. And it was so strange that I just stopped. I stopped walking, was perfectly still and just observed. And I started seeing even more detail which I had never expected to see. And everything I saw became very beautiful. The green of the grass, the different greys and browns of the bark of the trees, and even just little pebbles in the creek at the bottom of the valley. They really started to shine and become so incredibly beautiful. And I wondered, why had I missed all of that? And afterwards, because trained in science, I realized a very simple explanation which gives an idea of why mindfulness, what mindfulness, and how it makes life much more fun. When you look through the window of a speeding car, the light which goes to the back of your retina doesn't have enough time to form a full image before another image comes up, and then another image. The chemical reaction doesn't fully form, which means that you just see washed out images with not much detail, and you think that that's what the hillside is. When I got out of the car and started walking, my eyes had more time. The light had time to form a fuller image with more detail. So I literally saw more. But nothing beats just standing perfectly still. And then the image fully formed in the retina, and my mind had enough time to fully understand it. Only then were the colors really rich, rather than half-formed. Only then were all the details there. That's why it looked so beautiful, and I got so much more information. And I realized that most of us live our life as if we're in a speeding car looking out of the window. And we think we are aware of our surroundings, of the people we live with, and of ourselves. Mindfulness is going slower, being still. And then your awareness becomes fully powered. Not only do you see more detail, you literally become wiser to your body, to your emotions, and to life. But everything you see becomes more and more beautiful. Colors are rich, tastes are more full, everything is more alive and fun. That is mindfulness. Thank you.